We present the News Quiz with your chairman, Francis Wheen.
Hello and welcome again to the News Quiz. We start with a recruitment ad seen in the Bristol Evening Post, read by Charlotte Green.
20 trainee butchers and 20 meat packers required. We offer a stakeholder pension scheme.
Thanks to Debbie Evans for that. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Linda Smith and Tony Hawkes. And opposite them on my left, Alan Corran and Jeremy Hardy. Linda, which mediator believes the fastest route from A to B is via X, Y and Z?
Yes. This is, to him, Colin Powell. To the rest of the world, Colin Powell, isn't it? Colin Powell is going to the Middle East, really, but he's going a bit of a roundabout way, a bit of a displacement activity, really. He's going to Madrid. It doesn't seem entirely essential, really, but he's sort of putting it off a bit, I think, because he's not really going to get much reception there by the way it's going. Ariel Sharon not really showing much interest in his visit. They've not spent the weekend baking cakes and cleaning the house or anything. But, lots of stories from there, but none of them good.
It's not a very nice way to refer to the fact that Jeremy Hardy came back in one piece.
Well, that's true. That is a fact. That's a very good news that Jeremy, who has been youth hosteling in Palestine, that's the last time you go into railing, my lad. We've been worried out of our minds.
I've been watching, I often turn on to catch a bits of the news on the teletext, and I always make the mistake of reading Sharon's name as Sharon. And there's this thing up there sometimes, Sharon says no, and you think, they're really hard up for news this week. And then you've got, as Lynn says, you've got Colin or Colin Powell. I read that as Colin as well. You've got this terrible thing going on, and you think, we've got Colin and Sharon in charge of it. Very worried. I wonder if they put a little, strip on the front of their car as they're going around the Middle East. And Colin and Sharon.
Have to drag politics into everything, don't you, Tony?
Yes, 2 points to Linda. After talks with Sharon, or Mr. Sharon, the Secretary of State has come to the conclusion that the best way to get the Israelis to listen to his president is to set light to him. Well, a burning bush always worked in the Bible. Sharon accepts that he has ignored the wishes of the majority of the American people, but said he got the idea from the last American elections. On a far more serious note, Tony, why is it the end of the world for Bex?
Ah, well, of course, this is the biggest story of the last 25 years. It'll be David Beckham. There's a bit of irony in this story, and he's got this £160,000 car that protects him from any injury and bullet holes, and his boots aren't tough enough, are they? Because he goes charging through, and then an Argentinian comes out and tackles him, clearly, deliberately trying to put him out of the World Cup, and it works. So he's, of course, the nation's, in crisis now. I don't know what to do. Presumably they'll re-release the film My Left Foot. to cash in on this. But they think, the last thing I heard was that they think he might be all right. 6 weeks, which would be enough time for him to sort of get fit, run around a bit and come out and score the winning goal.
Well, I don't know why they were so upset about it, really, because it seems to me what England really likes to have in the World Cup is a ready-made excuse for not winning. And there it was. David Beckham's got verrucas. I will have to think of something else now. The weather or the fact that the other teams actually practice by playing football rather than having fights in nightclubs.
Yes, David Beckham has broken a metatarsal bone, no less, in his foot and is likely to miss this summer's World Cup. His wife has agreed to take time off to look after him, so it's not all bad news. The broken bone, this metatarsal, is just above the toes and just below the tattoo Beckham has on his foot, which says, "This way up."
If we're doing Beckham jokes, David Beckham goes to Selfridges and he's doing a bit of shopping and he sees a thermos flask. He says, "What's that then?" And the bloke says, "That's a thermos flask, Mr. Beckham." He says, "What's that do then?" He says, "Well, it keeps hot things hot and cold things cold." He says, "Oh, I'll have that then." Takes it home and Posh comes in. She says, "What you got there, babes?" He says, "A thermos flask." She says, "What does that do then?" She says, "It keeps hot things hot and cold things cold." She says, "That's marvellous, babe. You should take that training." He says, "I think I will." So he's on training and he's taking his kit out. And out comes his thermos and Ferguson comes and says, "What you got here, son?" He says, it's a thermos flask, boss. He says, "What does that do?" He says, "It keeps hot things hot, cold things cold." He says, "What you got in there?" He says, "Two cups of coffee and a chuck ice." True story, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. Moving swiftly on, Alan, onto the musical question, such as it is. Listen to this. I think it's time we start. Hold your fire, put down your weapon. You'll never get to heaven with an AK-47. I think it's time we start. Hold your fire, put down your weapon. Where do you think you're going with an AK-47? I think it's time we start. Hold your fire, put down your weapon. You'll never get to heaven with an AK-47.
Bloody Vera Lynn.
Actually, that was Gracie Fields singing, "Will you love me when I'm mutton like you do now I am lamb?" But the question is, never mind weapons of mass destruction, where has there been a mass destruction of weapons?
Oh, I'm glad I got the IRA question. I have to walk home alone. Fortunately, the evenings are lighter than they were. And I'm carrying my wife's makeup mirror to look under the car. Yes, the IRA have decommissioned something. I mean, every time I see the decommissioning on television, it's always the same weapons. And the video they use of it is beginning to break up a bit. And the weapons aren't even current anymore. They've got all these sort of First World War Vickers guns and things. But I gather the IRA are decommissioning more of these things. They're putting it in a hole somewhere and putting concrete over them, and then they're going to come and say, "We've decommissioned these."
The begrudgers, though, the DUP, are just not going to be happy until the last pikes from 1798 have been smashed to pieces. They'll say, "We can still not sit across a conference chamber with people who have the capacity to fire rubber bands at us."
Peter Robinson from the Democratic Unionist Party, I think that's the one he's in, he dismissed this as being an event of no significance. Well, making a cup of tea and not drinking it is an event of no significance. He's got it completely wrong. It does have some significance, surely. And I'm the person to explain it to him.
I think they ought to have made the decommissioning fun for the decommissioning body by just leaving the stuff in little piles in forests with little notes on trees with riddles saying, "My first is in Semtex but not in fertiliser."
2 points to Alan and an escort home. General de Chastelain confirmed that a substantial number of weapons had been placed where they could do no harm. They've been given to the British Olympic shooting team.
Actually, Tony, making a cup of tea and then not drinking it is a significant act. That would mean you were going mad.
No, it would mean you'd gone off the cup of tea that you'd just made. That's what I'd argue, anyway.
But a mood swing like that, that's not normal. Mm.
We start round two with a cutting from the Newham Recorder.
Detective Inspector Ian Chiverton of Newham's Borough Intelligence Office says, "If your mobile phone is stolen, dial 999 immediately."
Thanks to the Reverend Ron Smith of Manor Park for sending that one in. Linda, which cunning fox was caught out by the media pack?
Cunning?
Fox with a capital F.
Well, cunning. Not really very cunning, though, was he? Liam Fox. I'm assuming that's who it is.
And you assume right, yeah.
Liam Fox, who is in the cabinet that stalks the real cabinet, shadowy cabinet, and he's something to do with health, isn't he? And he's not been very cunning, really, because what he's done, he said one thing to the main conference, which is national health, marvellous, and then to a fringe conference of doctors, who you guess would tell on him, he said, "National health is part of the axis of evil." "And must be smashed with all our might before they infect the world." Doesn't seem a great vote winning. I think it's just showing off. It's just attention grabbing, really, isn't it?
Is he the same Dr. Fox that does the chart?
No.
Pepsi chart.
Yes, he is.
Ah, he's jolly good on that show. He counts down the top 10 brilliantly.
Tapes published and recorded by the Daily Mirror have revealed plans by Shadow Health Minister Dr. Liam Fox to break public support for the NHS and introduce new... Sorry, this is hopeless.
God, you're no good, are you, Francis? I thought Simon was crap, but now...
I'm still recovering. I have been feeling a bit queasy
it's
today.
It's like Blair and Kinnock, isn't it? You suddenly hanker for the old one.
No, I had a... I've been feeling a bit queasy all day. On the way here, I had to stop off in this church I know in Soho, mm-hmm. which is very good because it has a little bowl at the back and it says, for the sick. So, Anyway, in case anyone cares, Dr. Fox denied wanting to introduce NHS privatisation through the back door, mainly because it's already blocked up with patients waiting on trolley beds. Jeremy, which doors have caused an ecological storm?
Greenpeace have protested that there's a new government building and it's Prescott's going to be in there, so it will be the Minister of Fat, Lazy People whose role in life is to shaft the workers in their own accent. What happened was Greenpeace taken in ecologically sound doors and replaced all the existing ones because the doors that are in there are all endangered and from endangered species of doors.
Isn't that terrible to kill a whole door just for its knob?
It's a very potent aphrodisiac. We should have been suspicious. When the government promised that they would not use endangered forests in the wood for any government buildings, we should have thought, ah, that sounds like a promise from the government. Aha! Aha! And we should have known. Basically, they bought a load of dodgy, endangered white rhino skin doors with dodo hinges and things.
Well, these Greenpeace demonstrators got in disguised as builders, apparently, but it was obvious they weren't builders. You know, they had their bottoms covered over.
They might have been Taliban builders.
Tony's absolutely right. Environmental and, indeed, Jeremy, who answered the question originally, and...
This is like a school version of the news course.
And then you're going to get detention if there's any more of this.
Actually, Jeremy, you said he was making Simon look good. He's making Richard Whiteley look good now.
Linda, who's suing for plenty of dough?
Well, dough. Dough. Yeah. That's Homer Simpson.
Oh, you spotted him. Well done.
Dough. And... They're being sued? He's being sued by someone? Oh, Tony's nodding very
knowledgeable. Well, you can't sue Homer. You know, he's a cartoon.
No, I think you'll find it's a documentary.
Oh, is it? Okay. We'll have a little chat after.
So
we
what?
Know this. Is anybody going to answer?
Do you know? You were right.
Yes. I am. It's something...
Simpsons.
Yes.
Brazil, isn't it?
That's it, yeah.
Brazil.
Simpsons Brazil, you think that's an answer?
Well, Brazil are complaining about an episode of The Simpsons where they go to Brazil.
That's right.
And, yes.
Yeah. Well, blame it on. They called the episode Blame It On Lisa instead of Blame It On Rio, and The Simpsons went there and things that happened to them weren't that flattering for the Brazilian tourist board, who just spent something like £12.5 million trying to say, come to Brazil.
They get eaten by a boa constrictor,
yeah, I think
that's one thing. They get mugged by little children. Well, that's
England, children,
really.
Taxi driver sort of kidnaps them and monkeys attack them on the beach. And for some reason, the Brazilians are up in arms about that.
The old Brazilian sense of humour there, out in force.
Yes, the makers of The Simpsons are facing legal action after Rio de Janeiro's tourist board complained about an episode that made fun of their city. The BBC also threatened to sue The Simpsons after a hilarious recent episode in which their English relation John Simpson claimed to have liberated Kabul single-handedly. Alan, which seafaring millionaires plan to retire to Dunstane Put?
It's all those mad buggers on the Thames, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
This block of flats has come in with lifeboats on it. And 80 millionaires living in these tiny, ratty show flats. And Thomas Stutterford, not a doctor with whom I have the most respect, but I quite like him because he works for the Times, and Stutterford is always, you know, if anybody is ill, Stutterford is there immediately to give a diagnosis. And he said in yesterday's Times that these people have to have statins because they take no exercise. You hear their arteries snapping like pipe stems because they have nowhere to go. They can just about drag themselves as far as the lift to go down to the bar. And then they're walked out to the golf course, which is one tee with one golf club on it. And then they, well, they're in the Thames at the moment, they hit one ball towards Dulwich and then they go to bed. And this is life. And after they finish being on the Thames, they're going to go somewhere else. And it's this moving block of flats. It looks strangely... I mean, I would rather have a flat on the iceberg, if it were me. I expected to see Kate Winslet bolted to the front of this as a... as a free gift for any old fart who was strong enough to get up the stairs. But the... it's just a very strange thing. It's just a tower block on a little plinth. And it someday my plinth will come. And it just goes up and down. It's a block of flats that goes around the world with a lot of terrible old people in it.
Is this the news quiz or what's my dream?
It's actually called The World.
It is called The World, that's right.
It's like one of those Jacobean plays in which people are gathered together to drive one another mad.
Yeah, I'd like to have a ship called the Rest of the World and just moor it alongside and make a lot of noise so they can't get to sleep at night.
Yes, this is the ship called The World, which docked in Greenwich, this mansion block on water. The properties all have names that sum up their position on the boat, such as Sea View and Sea View and Sea View. The Times said that Princess Michael of Kent will be a tourist attraction on the boat. Passengers will be invited to roll up and view the incredible male-named woman. Before we start the final round, here's an advertisement from Auto Trader magazine.
1993 Toyota Supra Twin Turbo, £14,250. Very rare, every toy, traction, cruise, private number plate, 160 miles plus per hour. Awesome. Girlfriend forgot to take pill. Gutted.
Thanks to everyone who sent that in. I think there were several dozen people who have nothing better to do than study the classified ads in Auto Trader who sent that in. Linda, listen to this. Linda, why have dogs been surpassed by 24 carat pets?
This is a story about rabbits becoming our favourite pet, or becoming more popular, perhaps, than dogs as a pet for adults. They've always been popular with children, but because you can leave them quite a long time without them dying, I think. they can sort of live like little camels, really, aren't they? Like the camels, English camels. A rabbit. But now rabbits are becoming popular with adults as a pet because they're not much trouble and they're not too noisy. They don't tend to keep the neighbours awake with their barking and stuff.
And you can eat them.
And you can also eat them. That's true.
I mean, an Airedale
can
be very tough.
Well, no, cats, you one there for sort of eating you. They would if they got the chance. Cats are basically psychopaths. They're very bad pets because they would kill you if they had the chance. If they learnt to open a tin, that will be you, dead. And I've had a terrible do lately with the local cats in my garden, the pond. Well, or my garden pond, or as they call it, Yo Sushi. It's carnage, complete carnage. I came out the other day, there were 5 dead frogs all around the pond, just all lying in twisted, mutilated positions. I did a little outline of them in chalk, actually, and taped that bit of the garden off. The police weren't interested at all. Just tried to frame up a black cat down the road, but I don't think it was him, it was this big ginger bastard. But so, no, cats aren't very good. But rabbits are a bit dull, aren't they? They'd be no good at that sort of lassie type. What? Bandits up at the pass, would they? They'd just trot towards you, and after a couple of minutes, they'd go, oh, sod this, I haven't had a shag for 2 minutes.
I thought the whole point of having pets was that they were really dependent on you, so that you've got this thing that needs you. Like, that's why goldfish are really good, because they just croak if you sort of have the music up too loud or look at them in a funny way. But you're right, cats are terrible because they just don't love you in that slavering dog-like way, because if you fell down the stairs and broke your back and you were lying there without your panic button and you looked at your faithful cat imploring them to kind of nudge the phone towards you so that you could tap out 999 with your nose, the cat would just look at you in that slightly annoyed way, wondering how hungry it's going to have to get before it eats your face.
Whereas a dog would be breaking up furniture and making a splint.
Well, it would at least lick its bollocks to amuse you.
We had a... This is an absolutely true story. When my children were small, we had a tortoise. And I put it in his box of hay in the tool shed when the weather got cold. And when the spring came, it wouldn't come out, and we looked at it. And I thought it had snuffed it. My missus gave it a bit of a sniff, and it actually was dead. And the children didn't know for about 3 years. We just told them that there were these cold summers, and not always tortoises do. And we kept this thing in the box, and every year we put it back. It was wonderful. Eventually, so the legs became holes, of course, because that will happen with tortoises. But then you could play it. It was like a conch. You could blow it. You could blow through where its forearm did, and you could get Moonlight Sonata coming out of his arse. It was a wonderful animal, but it didn't. I don't think it needed me. Why would you want? Your life would count something as a failure if a rabbit needed you. That's unless you have peculiar taste.
Those American fighting tortoises, though, they'll have you. You know, the ones that are trained by the South African army. Oh, they're terrifying. They creep up on you. You don't know it's happened until you're really, really old.
Researchers from the University of Warwick have concluded that rabbits are the pets best suited to modern lifestyles. They don't need constant affection. They don't need to be taken to walks. They don't need to be taken for walks. They're ideal for people who want...
Tell you what, now, not yeah. only does it make Richard stuff. Whiteley yes. look good, he makes Paul Ross look good. Now, you see, Simon could take a joke.
Shame we had to kill him, though, isn't it? He knew too much. He knew the answers.
Couldn't.
Yes, I'm
it is cut
and
half whipped through a programme.
All right. Yeah. Don't worry, bother, really. Tony.
I think you're doing a smashing job.
Bonus point to Tony Hawks.
Thank you.
Tony, Tony, why were there 7 brides for only 1 brother?
Ah, is this the bigamist story earlier in the week? There was a guy who, well, basically he seems to be addicted to marriage. Got married 5 times and then thought, well, I can't be bothered with all this divorce business. I've gone off this one. I think I'll just marry another one on the sly. And then he married that one. And then he thought, think I'll marry another one as well. And do you know he got into trouble for this? Because apparently it's against the law. And he married one of them on the wedding anniversary of one of his previous marriages as well. So he had style.
Well, it was either that or having to buy some flowers for the previous one.
I'm busy that day, love.
He lived in Thamesmead.
Yes.
Which I thought his lawyer could have used in his defence. Because I know Thamesmead, it's a dreadful place. It's not a bad night out, bigamy, really, in Thamesmead. Oh, it's just this terrible estate that's sort of flats built round a series of man-made wind tunnels, really. It's sad, really, because, I mean, there are children involved and everything, but he was given sort of community service. I thought, really, he should have been sentenced to sort of being married to them all at the same time. That would have been quite good if he'd had to redecorate the back bedrooms of 7 different houses.
They made Clockwork Orange in Thamesmead, you know. They couldn't get Basingstoke.
Yes. They had to tart it up a bit first.
Here's 2 points, Tony. It's 7 times married taxi driver Alexander Spencer, who's been exposed as a polygamist by his 6th wife and given a community punishment, along with an injunction not to go within 500 yards of Moss Bros. Now that Mr. Spencer's admitted his addiction to repeatedly going down the aisle, he's applied for a job as a BA air steward.
Is community punishment where you have to listen to people singing 10 green bottles?
Yeah. Around a campfire. Ging gang gooly gooly.
I'm 40.
Right,
you must be
Alan,
using it right about now. What?
You say tomato, who says bacon, lettuce and tomato?
Oh, right. Yes. Well, when Stephen Byers did his great vault fuss over rail track compensation and said we will be paying people the money after all, we all said where would it come from. He hadn't realised that the Department of Transport had sold the secret of the 3-year-old sandwich to the Americans, who have now produced this sandwich which lasts 3 years. You and I used to eat on Connex Southeast, or at least open our beer bottles with. And what was really unsettling about the news was that we were rather hoping that the Afghan war, such as it is, would be over a bit earlier. But no, what they've done, they've invented the 3-year sandwich, which ought to tell us something. And they're sending these lads off into the mountains with these BLTs that last forever. I don't know what the secret of this sandwich is, but it doesn't curl and it doesn't go stale and it doesn't go rotten.
Has it got preservatives, or is it just a very, very long baguette?
How the hell do I know? I mean,
does it take 3 years to eat the sandwich?
It will last, well, remain edible, anyway, for 3 years. These sandwiches will be dropped behind enemy lines, causing a certain amount of cholesterol damage. Anyway, that's 2 points to Alan. And before we reveal the extraordinary secret of the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Linda.
This is a cutting from the Islington Gazette, sent in by Rose Albrow. An embarrassing booking gaffe meant a leather and rubber fetish event was held in the same building as a Beatrix Potter play for children. Kids and their parents flocked to the production of Peter Rabbit at the Pleasance Theatre in Carpenter's Mews. The London Fetish Fair, a monthly sadomasochistic event, was held downstairs in the same building. A small fire during the performance 2 weeks ago meant the building had to be evacuated, prompting embarrassing scenes between red-faced parents and scantily dressed fairgoers. Said a spokesman for the Fetish Fair, "We didn't mean to alarm anyone, but under the circumstances, we needed to whip our members out quickly." I entirely made up that last bit.
Tony.
Yes, this is from the Borneo Post foreign section, sent in by Mr. J. Meekin, and it goes, an American woman had no need to fasten her seatbelt on a flight from Scandinavia to the United States after a high-pressure vacuum flush sealed her to the toilet seat of a Boeing 707 toilet. She got sucked in after pushing the flush button while seated, activating a system to clean the toilet by vacuum. She could not get up by herself and had to sit on the toilet until the flight had landed, so that ground technicians could help her get loose. She was stuck there quite a long time, said an SAS spokeswoman.
Jeremy.
This is sent in by Tim Sparrow from Nutley, and it's a small ad. Mobile Virgin, as new, £40.
Alan.
It's from the Buckinghamshire Advertiser. It says, during 2001... Morton Council pest control officers assisted with the destruction of 5 squirrels, 173 wasps, 1 beetle, 1 woodlouse, 1 strawberry weevil, 17 ants, 10 bees, 8 fleas, 5 bedbugs, 1 red spider mite, and 1 unspecified insect believed to be a gnat.
Thank you all, and now let's look at the final score. Thanks to our single transferable point system that we're experimenting with, each team has 17 points. And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Linda Smith, Tony Hawkes, Jeremy Hardy and Alan Corrin. The chairman was Francis Wheen and the news was read by me, Charlotte Green. The chairman's script was written by Paul McKenzie, George Poles, Simon Littlefield and Dave Cohen. And the producer was Lucy Armitage.